Oh, y'all, I hate to say it, but the downside breakout is happening in corn, and it doesn't feel like it's far behind in wheat. Soybeans are holding in the sideways trading range. Livestock futures are trading higher, even as gasoline prices push to another new all-time high overnight. We'll find out how inflation and supply chain disruptions are making their way into 2023 crop plans.
Live from the Handsome Newsman's glorious return via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with John Doggett from the National Corn Growers Association. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with Brad Nelson and Tim Gregerson. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I am Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, Farmer Forum with Brad and Tim, two master scouts on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. And with everything that is going on around the Corn Belt and up into the Northwest production areas, I just kind of thought, doggone it, it's time to get a couple of people that have been watching crop development and watching it not only in their specific area, but they pay close attention to what is happening across the country with crop development.
Well,
so
we're
going to get these guys on and kind of drill into what their biggest concerns are for the 2022 corn and soybean crops, what they're most optimistic about, right? I mean, we cannot forget to go down that path and highlight some of the areas that are doing really, really well out there. So we're going to do that. And then we'll talk some inputs, too, with the guys because they've got things pretty much handled for 2022, but they are already looking forward to 2023 and starting to make plans there as well. So,
yes,
an extra day off. You tacked on, got a 4-day out of a 3-day. Good for you, man.
An extra day off. I was visiting one of the Midwest's crown jewel cities. And I'm going to tell you, yes, there was artisan cheese. But really, what I savored most enthusiastically
was
some classic barbecue. There are cities in the Midwest, I know, that vie for the title of the best barbecue. I may sort of try and chase down where that title belongs in the Midwest as the summer goes on. I'm off to a great start. I come back 3 pounds heavier and my pants are a little bit tighter and I feel doggone good. I'm so glad to be here.
If 3 pounds did that, it just means the pants were too tight before you left.
Too tight to begin with, maybe.
Too tight to begin
that.
With.
Yes, it's the pants' fault. It's not me.
That's right. Let's get to the news. What do you got, bud?
Well, let's start with some highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update. This is for the week ended May 29. And Chip, it feels like we've taken some big steps forward. Corn, 86% planted. That compares to 87% on the 5-year average, where 61% emerged. Soybeans, 66% planted, compares to 67% on average. And 39% emerged. Spring wheat, 73% planted, still behind the average pace there, but 42% emerged. Winter wheat is 72% headed, 29% rated good to excellent, up 1 point from last week on that good to excellent rating. And cotton is 68% planted, 7% squaring, 44% rated good to excellent. Chip.
Yeah. We did get caught up, but we got caught up in the second half of the planting window, not in the optimum planting window. So that's a little concerning. It starts us off a little late, but what happens after that plant comes up out of the ground after we get emergence? That's what I want to talk with Brad and Tim about and just see how does the crop development compare to year ago as of right now?
Well, Chip, President Joe Biden said he will send Ukraine advanced rocket systems and other U.S. weaponry to better wage war with Russia, ramping up military support as the conflict drags into its fourth month. The package of weapons includes missiles that will allow Ukraine to strike locations nearly 50 miles away. A senior administration official said Ukraine provided the U.S. with assurances it would not use the weapons to attack Russian territory. I guess the intent here is defensive weapons, Chip.
Yeah. Defensive weapons that allow you to go a bit on the offensive, I think, is what we're really looking at here. Yeah.
Well, the European Commission says Russia is currently blocking 22 million tons of grain in Ukraine, bombarding houses where wheat is stored and mining fields. The president of the European Commission noted getting the wheat out of Ukraine will be, quote, tedious and expensive. But she also said it is necessary. Meanwhile, Pope Francis appealed to authorities on Wednesday to lift the block on exports of wheat from Ukraine, saying it could not be used as a, quote, weapon of war.
Yeah, I'm sure that Vladimir Putin is going to pay close attention to what the Pope is pleading for. It's such a weird situation, Davis, because we continue to hear that they are going to try to open it up and bring some of the wheat out of Ukraine. The problem is Ukraine isn't involved in the talks, as far as I can tell.
Well, Chip, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen yesterday on CNN conceded she was wrong last year about the threat posed by rising inflation. For the month of May, the Dow and the S&P 500 finished the month essentially flat. According to the Wall Street Journal, ship operators have been adding millions of boxes to international operations over the past 2 years. And finally, China's financial capital is easing COVID-19 restrictions, opening public transport and shops today, Chip.
Yeah, opening it up today. It's been 2 months.
It's been 2 months.
Since they've been locked down. The impact is just going to be staggering to that Chinese economy. All right, Davis. Hey, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon. Right. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Good morning, Margie. Hello, Margie.
Oh, what'd you say to her while I was gone?
I don't know.
I hope she's not upset.
I don't know what I said. I wonder if Joe's hitting all the right buttons or not.
I think I am.
I bet he is.
I'll bet he is. So what else did you have in the news there, Davis?
Chef?
Well, I want to go back to
Wait, Davis, I think I do hear Margie. Hello, Margie. Are you there?
I am here, gentlemen. I apologize for the snafu.
All right, no worries. We're working on getting our orders in on 2023 crop inputs, and we're doing it with a lack of data.
Well, so it's a really interesting long tail and heavy weighted tail that COVID has put on ag retail. And that really came to light as some ag retail and wholesale leaders were on a recent panel just talking about with the supply, you're a hero if you have it and you're a zero when you don't. And partially that is being said because they have had dramatic changes to their business. In fact, there's 22 product that has not been put on yet, but these retailers are having to place their orders for that same product for use in 23. So they're really having to forecast out a lot longer lens. And also let's talk about what their working capital has been, because if you look even at fertilizer prices, so think about every ton of fertilizer that they have in the shed and how that has increased in value and how they have to weigh that when they're forecasting 23 demand.
Yeah. This is not easy, trying to manage in a supply side crisis or supply side disruption with all of the without a full set of data on what went into the 22 crop. It's all going to play out. We'll make it work. Margie, thank you.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. We've got John Doggett next.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. Let's bring him in, John Doggett, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. John, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
Good talking to you. And is it nice to have good weather and growers in the field and getting the crop in? You know, 10 of the conversations I've had with folks in the last couple of days, much different than what we had about 10 days ago.
Certainly is. I'll say that we are caught up on plantings nationally, but we've got that area up there in the Northwest production areas, North Dakota, Red River Valley, and even northern South Dakota, John, that the guys are still really struggling up there. There's talk of some flexibility in the crop insurance rules and regs to provide some extra incentive to continue to go ahead and try to plant some corn up there, right?
There's talk of that, and we're going to have to look into that. But, you know, it's either too dry or too wet across the country, and we've got too much of both.
Yeah, that certainly is the case. John, as we have been talking, well, the whole year and going back to last fall about the tariffs on fertilizer imports, it's starting to feel like there is some more momentum behind the idea of really pushing hard and lifting those tariffs on fertilizer imports. Am I reading the situation right?
You're reading the situation right. There is a lot more pressure on reducing the tariffs or eliminating the tariffs. We think they ought to be eliminated. You know, we've seen fertilizer prices come down. But they need to come down some more, you know, but we need to make sure we have supply as well. And I think the tariffs, I think we have a good chance of getting these tariffs taken care of. It may take some time, but I think there is some possibility. I'm hearing more now about that than I have in the last several months.
Right. More and more groups are signing on to the idea that these have outstayed their time, and it's time to pull those tariffs off. Do you think it can be done in time to influence the price of fertilizer for 2023 crops supplies?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not particularly good on numbers. I'm not sure. If they were removed tomorrow, what is that? How soon does that price effect take place? Does it take place? Yeah, I mean, I think it would certainly help. There might be some drag on that, but certainly the sooner that can happen, the better. We do need to get these tariffs reduced. But the tariff situation is troubling with the fertilizer situation. But the bigger issue I'm hearing from farmers right now is what's going on with the administration on atrazine and on glyphosate. Okay. My phone's ringing off the hook about that.
Okay. What is the situation at EPA with those chemicals?
Well, that's a good question. At EPA, they're saying, you know, they're moving forward. They're not going to change anything on glyphosate. But the Solicitor General of the same administration is now going to engage in the case before the Supreme Court on whether glyphosate is cancerous or not, and how are we going to deal with the situation in California? You know, Chip, we all want to feed people. That's why farmers farm and ranchers ranch, is that we want to feed people. And the administration has been real clear. They want us to do everything we can to feed people, and they want us to go ahead and deal with climate change. The two tools that we need to do those things that are at risk right now are glyphosate and atrazine. You take those tools away, we'll go back to farming the way we did back in the 60s with about the same results, and we'll feed about the same amount of people, and we'll not do the things that we have promised that we would do. You can't tell farmers, do this and do this, but then, oh, we're going to take all your tools away. We don't know what's going on. I mean, the Secretary of Agriculture was surprised at the Solicitor General's decision to involve himself in that in the Supreme Court case. That's really troubling.
Yeah.
And Tom Vilsack has been the best proponent for agriculture we've had in this administration and in the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. He is a straightforward guy, and he has done a great job. And the fact that he did not know about this decision is again, that's deeply troubling.
It's troubling, and it's an opportunity to throw an I'm not going to go there. It's an opportunity for the administration to veto the wishes of the people that they have put in place to make these kinds of decisions. In other words, throw them under the bus. And
Yeah.
I'm very concerned. And
what does the Solicitor General, what does the Solicitor General know about glyphosate?
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, it's he knows as much about glyphosate as a jury of my peers, which is where the original glyphosate causes cancer designation came from.
Right, and in a case in San Francisco, California, where a lot of the evidence that was being forwarded by the manufacturer of glyphosate was denied by the judge, so that the jury couldn't take a look at it. So, right. That's crazy.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Another administrator that has talked a good line when it comes to helping agriculture and helping biofuels is EPA Administrator Michael Regan. He's got a big day coming up on Friday with the renewable volume obligations for 2021-2022. And hopefully we are going to get a decision on the SREs. He's on record as saying that this is going to be a robust RFS for 2022. If it's not, does Regan lose all credibility, or do we look at the administration as, again, potentially throwing an administrator under the bus?
You know, that's a good question. And the administrator has been consistent in saying that that he will uphold the letter and the intent of the law when it comes to the RFS. He's made some progress, but the decision that occurs 48 hours from now is going to be very, very important. It will send the signal, not just on the policy of ethanol, but on where is this administration going when it comes to agriculture? How are we going to interact with the federal government on these kinds of decisions? And you know, I had a conversation with a senior administration official earlier today, and as I explained to him, the folks at the fork of the creek and in the coffee shop, they don't care about the process. They want to know what is the federal government going to do to or for them, and make it in real clear terms. And I think that would help this administration more than anything, is if we had a little bit of clarity. It would really, really help, and a little bit more interaction. We'd like to sit down and talk to the secretary on some of these issues. We're hoping we can get that done soon. But, you know, those are important things. We have to have these conversations, and it needs to be about conversations as much as it does about process. We know that process is important. We know that the administration is bound by a lot of different statutes, including the Administrative Procedures Act. But that doesn't cut it at the coffee shop. Put it in plain language and talk to us. Keep talking to us or with us. I think that's really, really important.
Very good. Very good. I've said to Secretary Vilsack more than once that I think he needs to be out in front of the public more often talking ag issues, because he does a great job of defending all segments of agriculture, whether it be commercial agriculture or local, locally raised agriculture and the farmer's markets approach. He does a great job supporting it all, and we need to get him out there in front of it. Real quickly, June 1 today, and I can still buy E15. That feels pretty good, John.
I tell you what, isn't it nice buying E15? You know, I was at a store the other day, and I was wearing my Field of Dreams T-shirt, and the guy at the store was asking me, "Well, did you go to the game? We talked about all of that." And I thought, "All right, you know, we're going to get into the ethanol thing." He said, "Can you tell me where I can buy E15 in the Washington area?" And I said, "I can't." And he was really offended. He said, "I want to be burning E15 because I understand that it's better for my engine, it's better for the environment, and I also understand that it'd be better for my pocketbook." And I said, "Well, you got all three of those things absolutely correctly. You know what, the decision and the fact that we can use E15 throughout the summer driving period is it's going to incentivize more and more retailers to buy those blender pumps. We are putting a lot of corn grower dollars into those pumps, We're going to help subsidize those. The federal government's going to subsidize those.
All right.
We've got a clear path forward, finally.
Excellent. John Doggett, CEO, NCGA.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. And Beej, I can't help it. I feel like I'm watching the downside breakout in corn happen right now. Am I?
Yeah, corn and wheat both just eroding technically here. Corn planting pace is almost back to normal, just one percentage point behind the five-year average. So big increase over the past several weeks here. That's helping put pressure on the market. It relieves concerns about a lot of corn acres switching to other crops or being claimed as prevent plant.
Okay. The wheat market obviously has been under some tremendous pressure here lately. Anything in particular happening there? Is it the idea that we're going to get some supplies out of Ukraine?
Well, I think that kind of started the ball rolling, but that continuation of that today from yesterday's news. The other thing is just seasonals. I mean, winter wheat harvest here in the United States is starting in the far southern plains and will pick up over the coming weeks. And it's just really difficult to swim upstream in the face of that harvest pressure.
Okay, very good. Finally, even though corn was sharply lower yesterday, the feeder cattle market really couldn't move to the upside. Today, we've got some tremendous strength there.
Absolutely. So I responded to the corn market today, and they did earlier yesterday. They just weren't able to hold on to some of that strength into the close. And so we'll see if that is able to happen today or not. But here mid-morning, ripping with gains of more than $3 across all the contracts there. And then that's helping the live cattle market, which is also trading sharply to the upside, despite a weaker tone in the cash market yesterday to kick off the week.
All right. We've got some strength going on in the hog market as well. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. Man, Davis, I tell you what, John was on it. He had some issues that he wanted to talk about today and jumped right to it. The glyphosate issue, an atrazine issue, is something that has got to be up towards the top of the priority list and getting resolution there. And there is no way that USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack should have been surprised that the Solicitor General is getting involved in this at the Supreme Court level. It's astonishing. And hopefully Secretary Vilsack is inserting himself into the process as quickly as possible. So
for sure.
I'm sure that we will continue to get updates on that. All right, let's get this farmer forum started. We got Brad Nelson from Minnesota. Brad, welcome back to AgriTalk, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good, Chip.
Good.
Thanks
glad
for having
that
me
you're
on.
Yep, glad that you're here. Tim Gregerson over in eastern Nebraska. Tim, welcome.
Yes, good to be here again, Chip.
All right. So we were talking about the glyphosate and atrazine issue and the idea that they are evaluating whether or not that these products should be available for use out on the farm. Brad, I mean, take those two things away from us makes everyone's job a little harder, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I mean, those products are really good tools for us out here. I mean, atrazine in our broadleaf weed control out in corn country here, really just a little bit, makes everything work better and kills the weeds a lot better. And obviously, Roundup, is a great grass killer now, and it's not as effective as it once was on broadleaf, but it still is pretty active out there. So we need those things.
And the toxicity on glyphosate Roundup is so low. I mean, when you look at the actual research on it, it's got as much risk as causing cancer as table salt and hot water. And Gregerson,
it's one of the safest markets on the no question.
Yeah, it's one of the safest things on the market. And Tim, they're talking about taking it away from you.
Well, Roundup is a great tank mix partner. I mean, it still gets the grasses and some broadleafs, and it's got a great surfactant in it. It's a great tank mix partner. We don't have to use it at as higher rates as we used to necessarily when we tank mix it. And as far as atrazine is a herbicide that has stood the test of time. We are working with a lot of herbicide resistance right now in the industry across the Corn Belt and Bean Belt. And atrazine is one thing that hasn't given out. It still works if it's used right and respected. Yeah. I mean, so many of the other chemicals are getting resistance to weeds.
Yeah,
we need atrazine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Brad, how are things looking there in southeast Minnesota? Did you get things wrapped up?
We got everything planted in pretty good shape. We got off to a later start than what we like planting corn, but the corn crop looks really good. Our stand is just excellent. I think it's just as far along right now as it was a year ago when we planted probably 2 weeks earlier. So,
okay.
I'm pretty happy with the way my corn looks. Beans is barely coming out.
What did you say about the corn stands? Everything's looking good there?
My stand is just excellent. It, you know, to say 100% of it came isn't accurate probably, but it's not too far off. So.
Wow.
And that was not the case last year, you know, especially with some varieties were really spotty in emergence with the cold spring we had last year, too. So.
Right, right. Tim, what about you?
So, yeah, I'm...
Yeah, our planting window was probably... We had one rain in between, but besides that, it was probably as narrow as it ever has been. We planted more of our seeds closer together in a time frame and got our pre-herbicides on in a close time frame because we were so cold early on. We were ready to go, but luckily our planting conditions, other than the cold, were pretty darn good because we're a little bit drier here this year, and normally we have some pretty wet springs here. Our corn stands are 50% average and 50% above average. Our bean stands are probably mostly all below average, to be honest with you. Beans have had a little tougher time. We got into that wet spell and that little cold, wet 10-day week here a couple weeks ago, and they're struggling a little bit more, but they're filling in as we speak.
Okay.
I can't believe how many beans are being replanted in Nebraska for frost, though. Not in my county. But you get west of here, and I just can't believe the amount of beans being replanted for froze off.
Well, in eastern Iowa, I know that there's some beans being replanted because it was wet, seed went in the ground, and then we had those really hot temperatures, 90 degrees, put that concrete crust over the top, and the poor guys just couldn't get up through that crust. So now they're replanting some beans in eastern Iowa, too. Brad, what about there in southeast Minnesota? What's the situation on beans?
Well, beans are just coming up. Some guys have capability of planting beans when they're planting corn at the same time. And some of those beans are up, and they look pretty good. Mine, like I said, I did all mine after I did my corn. And they are just starting to come up now, you know, or the last day I can kind of see them from the road.
Okay.
They kind of see them, and you drive off there with a ATV or something, and they're coming nice, you know, but it's just too early to say that I'm going to be real happy with them, but I don't have a lot of cause to think I'm not going to.
Right.
You know, and I think I'm kind of exceptional in our neck of the woods here in Minnesota because you don't have to go very far, and that's it got really wet, and it's been a struggle, you know. I mean, even southern Freeborn County here where I am, they had a 5-inch rain when I had 1.75 inches, like, just a little while before they're going to start planting corn. And it really set them back. They're still planting beans down there. And you go north up to Owatonna and Medford and Waseca, and you start going northwest of there, they struggled way more than I did. So, what right. those graphs look like up there could be totally different than what I got.
Right. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay, Tim, I'm going to start this question with you because I know that you and Brad both talk on a regular basis, and I know that you talk with some growers across the country. What's your thoughts on corn planted acres? Are all of the intended acres going to get planted?
In Nebraska, yes, I think everything's going to get planted. You know, up north, no. South Dakota, up in that Watertown, South Dakota area, a large grower up there just planted his first field of corn about 6 days ago. And I'm not sure how much they got done, but I watched the radar on Monday afternoon. Yeah. And man, did it go right back up in there to South Dakota and Minnesota and Fargo, so North Dakota. So that area is, you know, they're going to try. They got all the incentive in the world this year to try with the prices up there. So they're going to drag the planters across there if they can. I'm sure it's not going to be good conditions if they do. And I suppose, though, there's just going to be some that doesn't get planted. They're that wet up there.
Yeah, yeah. Brad, what's your take? What's your thoughts on total corn acres?
Well, you know, you get up into that North Dakota range. I mean, here it is June 1st today, and up in our country, you know, you start planting corn in the first week of June, and it starts becoming a crapshoot for you to make it at the end of the growing season. We got some great early hybrids now, but you can still get a frost in mid to late September pretty easy, and, you know, especially the farther north you go. And so it gets to be a hard decision for guys, and so I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I do have a fellow that goes with us on crop tour every year, Eric Minks, you know, he got his yeah. corn in, but he's still got a bunch of beans to plant. And,
yeah.
You know, so he's struggled because of all the wet weather, I can tell you that. So,
yep. You know, you guys.
So, and he's not near as far north as some.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, the thing is, this year, what the guys are trying to figure out is, do you risk having some lower quality corn that you got to throw into the dryer before you can even take it to town? Do you run that risk, or do you just take the prevent plant? And with the market incentives that are in place, don't you take the risk of some lower quality corn, Tim?
You would sure think so. Particularly, I guess, if they've got a drying operation up there. You know, so many of those yeah. wheat farmers, if they didn't put in big storage and a dryer, that would be pretty risky. But if you got a dryer, you might could do that. One thing that comes back to me, I keep thinking about 2019 and the prevent plant.
Yeah.
And when you start talking about getting corn acres and how many are we going to get and stuff, you know, are we going to get back into that situation where the crop insurance is such that are we going to see a larger number of corn acres reported because of the prevent plant rule on corn, but
right.
they aren't ever going to be planted? Because that's the big thing that's going to affect the acres probably from here on out.
Right, right. You know, it's that they were intended to be planted for about 15 seconds while the paperwork was getting done.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That's how the rules on the prevent plant work. Well, then you come back in, you plant beans behind it. And then all of a sudden, your combination of planted acres, prevent plant corn acres, and soybean acres appears so big that nobody can believe it. Well, they're phantom acres. They were never really intended to be planted to corn. It's an insurance thing. So, anyway, we'll talk more about that and find out what the guys are optimistic about next.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this afternoon. We've got a farmer forum going, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Be sure to learn more about it at www.agweb.com/ACAM. Okay, we're talking with Brad Nelson from Minnesota, Tim Gregerson from Nebraska. Brad, I'll start you off the same way that I started Doggett off on this topic. It's June 1, and we can still buy E15. That's a good news kind of day, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's great to be able to market and buy the product and you know, burn it in our cars. We've had Dr. Andy Randolph on telling us how it really all works, and that's a wonderful product, you know.
It certainly is. And, you know, the confusion over why E15 has not been available during the summer months in the past is just mind-blowing, that it burns dirtier. That is so far from the truth, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. It's the exact opposite. It burns cleaner than E10. You know, the more you ratchet up your ethanol blending, the cleaner the emissions are in any vehicle. So yep. It's something that's been tried to be sold to us, like a lot of other things that aren't true.
Yeah, that's right. So if you want to work on cleaning up the smog in your metropolitan area, get on that E15 and higher blends and run that through the vehicle. So, Tim, Nebraska's always been a leader on the availability of higher blends of ethanol. I can't imagine that this is a big change for you, is it?
No, not really. We've had a decent amount of blender pumps over the last, 5 years put in here. And, you know, so it's available and stuff. And I was just driving by some, it would have been E10 this morning, well, probably E15 now that it's still going. And that gas was, unleaded gas with the E15 in it was probably about 35 cents cheaper than without. So that's not only the clean benefit coming through, you know, the economics when we're supposedly short on crude oil and that sort of thing, petroleum. So, yeah. Great benefits there in Nebraska.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. Okay, guys, let's talk markets here a little bit. Brad Nelson, it feels like this, like we are living through the downside breakout in the corn market right now. The market has offered some great opportunities on 21 crop, great opportunities on 22 crop. Have you taken advantage of them?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you just got to keep selling into this market, and you know, you kind of hold back a little bit before your crop gets up and out of the ground and get a little nervous about planting and that sort of thing, but you still got to push forward and make some sales so you're got some income coming in at a good price compared to what your cost structure is. So
there you go.
But you know,
if you stay focused on the profit potential and not just the price and the price action, it's a whole lot easier to pull the trigger on some sales, isn't it?
Well, it absolutely is. You got to look at revenue, you know.
Yep, yep. What about you, Tim? Have you taken advantage of the pricing opportunities on 22 crop?
Yes, on 22 we've probably taken a little bit more advantage on the corn than we have the beans thus far. Okay. But yeah, this is kind of a different year. You know, you see a lot of this trading that's going on, and we get a lot of moves at the nighttime, and so there's a lot of more diversified trading in the futures market right now than we've had for a long time. Don't know exactly always who that is, but it's made for a stronger market through this cycle, and now maybe we're due for a little bit of a setback here before we see what the summer weather is going to do to us.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've done a fair amount of 22 on corn and some on beans. 23, we're kind of dragging our feet a little bit yet because we don't know our costs.
Yeah. Have you started to dig into that at all, Tim? Because it's like Margie was talking about at the start of the show. The ag retailers are being asked to put in their orders on 23 crop inputs already, even on some product that hasn't been applied yet on the 22 crop. They don't have all the data that they really need to do an accurate job of that. Have you looked into the 23 crop?
You know, a little bit. As far as buying fertilizer, we haven't bought anything yet. I know anhydrous is in the last 2 weeks now has started to come down, which is great to see. So we're definitely paying very close attention to it, but we really haven't pulled the trigger yet, you know. And then you get over the herbicides and the crop protection stuff, and that's going to be a tougher one than ever, not only because of price, but possibly because of availability. And then, of course, seed didn't go up a lot last year. So it's, you know, I'm sure they're evaluating how much they want to charge for this next year, but I've not heard any prices there yet either.
Okay. All right. Very good. Brad, what about you? Have you done anything on the 23 crop inputs?
I have not purchased anything at this point in time. And, you know, I've held back because it's so high priced that, you know, I feel like how much risk you want to take. What I like saying to them is, you know, if I sell you corn, you don't pay me till you deliver. You know, maybe I don't want to fork out all that money right now, but I can't get any revenue off it till the fall of 23, you know. So.
Right.
So I'm just holding my cards at this point,
Gotcha. All right. Well, Brad, I sure hope that corn crop keeps coming along like you're talking about. And the weather that we've got coming here over the next few days looks to be a pretty good prescription, doesn't it?
Oh, I would say so. I'd like it to be a little bit warmer than what we're forecasting, but we're sitting good moisture-wise right now, and the temperature's not a big negative, and we're doing okay on GDU.
Good deal. Hey, good luck to both of you guys this year, and we will talk with you real soon, all right? Thank you so much. That's Brad Nelson. Brad Nelson, Southeast Minnesota. Tim Gregerson over in Eastern Nebraska. All right, you guys, we're going to try to put all this together and figure out what it means for the markets. Come back this afternoon. We've got Mike Mock.